Hi everybody, I'm Susanna Mars with Adventures in Artslandia, and we're going to dive into an area that I've never dove into before. And I have Jared Goodman from the Morgan Street Theater, and also Sarah Hart from Alma Chocolates, and Katrina Sarson from Oregon Artbeat. Katrina and I know each other from OPB, and we were talking one day when we were together about what she was up to, and she told me about this incredible food segment that she's got coming up on Oregon Artbeat. You want to tell everybody when it is?
I'm so excited. It's going to air finally on April the 13th, which is a Thursday at 8 p.m., the way Oregon Artbeat does. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be online forever, the way Oregon Artbeat is. Mm-hmm. But we're also having a screening for it that people can certainly come to if they want to at Beulah Land on Northeast 28th. But the idea was, I love food, and Oregon Artbeat is all about art. And I've been talking to them for a long time about how can we talk about the art of food. There's this whole art to food. And for me, the art of food wasn't necessarily plating, although we've done a story on Oregon Artbeat about plating. And it wasn't necessarily photographing food, though I've done a story before about someone who's a food arranger before the photographs are taken. But it was, who are these people who are taking food and treating it the way an artist might treat paint or clay, so that the work of art is the thing that they're making and they're thinking of it the way an artist thinks of art.
Well, it was so interesting, too, because when you introduced me to Jared and to Sarah, of course, I started reading and looking about what they were doing. And it really moved me, because I'm realizing with what's happening right now in our world, this primal ability of you with food to give people joy real quickly. You know, to enable them to feel something wonderful and delicious in such a kind of a primal way. I was just thrilled to read about what you're doing. And Sarah, I mean, I watched the video on your website, and just the care and beauty, the way you make things. Can you speak a little bit about your creative process when you develop something new?
Yeah. Well, so much of the creative process takes place in my back brain, you know, so by the time I'm actually doing it, what is happening is the experimental part of just, does it work, and the tinkering, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a tricky question. It's always hard to talk about your creative process. I'm always, what is it? There's always like a feeling I'm working towards, even though it's flavors that I'm working with, right? So I get a feeling in my body different. Of course, I want it to taste good, right? Like, so I'm experimenting with flavors, but there's also like, I know it's going to be good when I get like a feeling in almost in my heart. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that things are lining up. I don't know if that's a good explanation of the process, but that's a lot of what it's like. It'll just be some idea that's working in the back of my brain and that kind of gets tinkered with. And then I get cerebral about it after the fact, I think.
Wow. And how did you become interested in chocolate in the first place?
Well, I was obsessed with chocolate my whole life and got interested in really good dark chocolate quite a long time ago, I think. And then was tasting and eating all the, this was probably about maybe 15 years ago, eating all the chocolate I could get a hold of. There wasn't a lot available at that time. And then probably about 13 years ago, I was at the store kind of putting together an Easter basket for my son. And I got just so mad at what was available because it was so crappy. It was just like waxy bunnies and, you know, peeps and things like that. And I just was like, chocolate, like, people live and die over cacao. Historically, it was used as currency. Like, what is made out of chocolate should be amazing. Mm. Why isn't anybody doing it? Oh, why don't I do it? You know, so that's kind of where things started, and then it rolled from there.
Perfect. It came, blossomed out of Easter and spring and newness and birth, and
yeah,
it's really cool.
So what was cool, and what was my inspiration for this show, because it's a whole half hour show with four stories about four people like these guys, is that the way Sarah and Jared talk about the making is very much the way painters talk about painting. It's this sense that it's not just, isn't it beautiful, but it's this idea that you're communicating an idea or trying to get a feeling across and using food in some way as your media.
Well, it's so interesting because that brings me to Jared, who is operating Morgan Street Theater, and I knew not one thing about what you were doing until I started researching, and now I'm just, you know, what? This is fantastic fun. So tell everybody what Morgan Street Theater is.
Morgan Street Theater is a dessert pop-up that takes shape as dessert theater, where ice cream sundae tasting menu is created that's based on a theme, as well as artistic mediums, whether it's puppetry or dance or storytelling or live theater, as well as works of art.
So how do you find your collaborators, and what's your primary way into the work? Is it's through the ice cream and the sundaes, and then you find collaborators to work with you in the theatrical components?
Well, it began and it continues as me being the primary host and storyteller. I told the stories for the first 2 years, and then I realized there was kind of a ceiling on how many stories I could tell, and I found myself kind of winging it and feeling like I wasn't providing the same performative experience that I could with other stories. So I realized, you know, Portland's got this fantastic scene of artists. Why don't they come in and do their performances, and I'll create desserts inspired by their stories and ideas. So I guess in the same way that anyone networks, you just start meeting interesting people. I'm a very social person, so I will meet strangers and befriend them pretty frequently. And just over time, I met a variety of performance artists, or puppeteers or musicians, and I would tell them about what I'm doing, and I would invite them to come and see what it's all about. And fortunately, they enjoyed themselves, and they signed on, and then we put together an idea, and I bring them on.
So I know you have a couple coming up, one in particular that is about Passover, which I'm so fascinated by. So how did you develop that idea? And I also read about one that sounded fantastic, that was based on opera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you describe the opera?
Yeah, that was fantastic. And I wish I could reconnect with that opera singer. I've lost her email address, unfortunately.
I know a lot of opera singers. I just
we can
want
hook
you to
you
know.
Up.
This is how it happens.
Right.
This is how it happens.
We're going to hear it and go,
right. Wait a minute, Jared.
Portland Opera. I bet there'd be a lot of people who would like Sundays.
That was my first... No, it was my second fall of doing events. I was about a year into Morgan Street Theater. And a friend of mine has a wine bar on like Sandy and 24th. And I don't even remember how I met this person, but she sings opera. And I had said to her, I want to do a night at the opera. And this friend of mine who has a wine bar is also a fantastic storyteller. So he would tell stories about the wine, and I would tell stories about the ice cream, and this woman sang opera. And
only in Portland, can we just say?
Yeah.
Only in Portland.
Well, Morgan Street Theater could only exist in Portland. And I'm well aware of that. And I live here, so I'm doing it. If I were home in Virginia, it might not be nearly as successful.
I think that it would be successful. I think people would just love the fun of it and the. I'm Pollyanna.
Well, it's another conversation, but I am organizing for next year a one-man show that I want to take on tour. So that will be a test to see if this idea can catch on in other places.
Oh.
But that's, I can talk about that later. Mm-hmm. So a night at the opera was, not only did she sing opera, but she talked about the works and the stories behind those specific works and where they are coming from and the style of singing she would do. Because I'm a former educator, mm-hmm. and it's really important to me that not only are people entertained, but ideally there's like an educational component. So whether it's puppetry or opera or flamenco, I want the performers to bring their knowledge to the guests as well. And share kind of the history or the context of what they're doing.
Wow, sounds like school tour.
Yeah.
That would be fun, kids. Ice cream history, come on.
What could go wrong?
Match made in heaven.
Well, what I like about this whole thing and then about what you're doing and about the fact that you'd never done a thing of art and food before but saw the connection is that, like, I like that that's the education component is that creativity, like, I don't know. It doesn't have a boundary, right? It's
mm-hmm.
right. Yeah. I love that too. I mean, I've always felt ever since I started doing this podcast that my hope is that the the excitement of the creative process, no matter what artist you're talking to, can infuse anybody with desire and interest in mm-hmm. expressing themselves, you know, and that just makes me happy to think that I think that's probably one of the keys to happiness in life is to be able to get in touch with what you want to make.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you asked that question in the interview, like, do you consider yourself an artist? And at first I said no. And then I've been thinking about it ever since.
The way people do.
Yes. Well, because when I was a child, I drew all the time, nonstop, drew. And people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would say artist. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't have talent in any of the particular ways in which we say art is. You know what I mean? And so claiming that space for myself feels uncomfortable. But what I like is that what you're doing and what we're talking about is breaking that down. And if in that way, I then was remembering, like, when I first sort of started Alma, my daughter saying, like, oh my gosh, like, you've been a frustrated artist without a medium and you found it, you mm-hmm. know? And I guess I did. So anyway, yeah.
That's great.
I had the same story in that when Katrina asked me if I was an artist, of course not. Far from it. And for me, my mom is a professional artist. So
what medium?
Color pencil drawing. Mm-hmm. But she also does watercolor and oil painting and sculpture and print. And she went to school for art. She has an MFA. She's been a professional artist for like 30 plus years. So in my mind, not only is there this like institutional idea of what an artist is, but in my mind, it's like, well, I don't call myself a chef. Like, I didn't go to culinary school. I didn't spend years in kitchens. I don't feel comfortable with this title that is associated with years of practice and experience. At the same time, what I realized through the conversations with Katrina is that having a creative process that's intentional, that's how you make art, regardless of whether you went to school or not.
That is a big hang-up I think we have in our culture, maybe in the whole world, and that is deciding how we label people, and when we can kind of bust out the sides of what that is. I mean, that's an education, too. Look at our crazy system of deciding who's smart, who isn't. You went to college, you didn't. That's crap. I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head, and when you can find your own identity and find your own process and honor it, then you show other people honor what you want to do yourself, you know?
And that's part of my hidden agenda for every Art Beat story I do, but especially with this food thing. I think I might have said it to Jared. In my head, when I'm doing an Art Beat story, there's some kid watching that has this crazy idea that they think makes them really different, mm-hmm. but it actually makes them really magic. Mm-hmm. And if they can see somebody that has a crazy mm-hmm. idea that's doing something magic on TV, whether it's painting or sculpture or ice cream sundaes or chocolate, someone who is maybe an artist without a medium until they see something they never saw before, which is, wow, ice cream sundaes could be art. Wow, one time on Art Beat, we had a guy who inflated mattresses to turn minivans on their noses. Wouldn't be my art, but it is an art, along with all the painters and the sculptors and the glassware, the people that you know are artists. Wow. And so that's always part of my agenda, is to empower those people, whoever they are, young or old, to go, oh, wow, maybe I should try something intentional to create something to make my voice, to find my artistic voice.
It's so interesting because I think about how it really takes an artist to be somewhat humble about not knowing stuff. And I love that idea. I mean, because whatever medium you're in, I'm an actress, singer. I'm always trying to get a job. So you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing. But on the other hand, if you can look like you don't know what you're doing, then you open the door for the true creative processes, which is, we don't know what we're doing, okay? It's okay to not know what you're doing. And that's actually cool, you know? And it sounds like, you know, everyone in this room is on the same page about being okay with not knowing what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's, for me, I think that's part of my creative process, in that when I'm collaborating with someone who has spent many years of their life, I think last week, I did my very first puppetry event. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Portland has a thriving puppetry scene. the second or third biggest in the country.
Who knew?
Who knew, right? And working with these puppeteers and just seeing the amount of love and creative energy and focus that goes into the narrative stories as well as the puppets themselves, and all the details that go into even like a 3-minute work. And talking with them and getting their sense of, you know, the styles of puppetry and the history of puppetry. I don't know anything about puppetry. I only know what I see and what I think about because I'm not necessarily reading books on it. And when I hear their knowledge and their experience, then I'm like, oh, I want to tap into that idea or that that theme or that focus. And then that imbues like the dessert that I make.
Collaboration is such an awesome part of art making. I just think it's so wonderful when you can be with somebody in that state of creation. It's magical.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's the best.
They're getting that sort of play, and then, yeah, I think there's, this is related, but I just remember when I was in college, I had a semester, well, my daughter was quite young, and so I had a semester where I was sick a lot, and she was sick a lot, so I missed a lot of class. And I noticed a thing that when I took a test in the classroom with other people, I did so much better than when I took that test, same exact test, you know, by myself as a makeup test. And I think there is something in the, like, energetic exchange that happens when you're collaborating with somebody that there's, like, you know, it's really different. There's something that happens when it's going between two people or more than that. Like,
it's so interesting too, because I think a lot of us humans, we, you know, we use our bodies as a shield, a protector, and you, to me, what you're speaking to is that kind of energetic exchange that's molecular and so important. You know,
and it makes me think about just the idea that as an artist or as a creative person, you want to be open to influence, and influence is in a way collaboration. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you're literally collaborating with an alive individual, and sometimes you're, well, I guess it's not really collaboration if the person's dead, but you know, you can find out about their work.
But it kind of is, right?
Yeah.
Because you're looking at a piece of work, and you're like feeling the feelings, and you're probably thinking about, like, what were they thinking when they made that, and, like, why did they put that brush stroke there? And
yeah,
so you are collaborating with, you know what I mean?
I never thought you'd collaborate with dead people.
Collaborating with dead people
on the next. I mean, I have got to say, I think there is a lot to that, because, I mean, I believe that energy in the universe is constant. I mean, it changes forms, but you see something, and or I always think it's interesting to look at someone's handwriting. You're like, oh my gosh, that human, Sarah Hart, wrote her name there. That's your energy pouring into the paper. So to me, I totally believe that we just are constantly bouncing off each other because of our egos. We want to think that we made things all by ourselves because we like to feel our egos in charge or something, you know?
Yeah, well, not to go too... Well, I'm fascinated. I could do a whole talk for the whole hour on this thing. But I had the experience. I always liked Frida Kahlo's work, for example, but I'd never seen it. I'd only seen reproductions of it. And then I had a chance to go see it at a show in Minneapolis. And I bawled because the energy that was in the work when you actually saw it was so different than when you saw it reproduced on the page. Like, I felt like I was feeling her. So anyway,
I feel the same way about visual art. I love to walk around it. I'm fascinated by it. It's exciting. And it's, I don't know, I guess artists think like we do, right? I mean, many of them do.
Well, what
I have
Hugo.
I have the opposite response in that art for me has to be very cerebral in order for me to get it. Mm. I mean, some art I can look at and like, oh, that's really beautiful, or I don't get it, and that's really ugly. I'm only moved in this emotional way after I've kind of engulfed myself in understanding the work of art.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think live performance, I will say, has moved me more than like a painting or a sculpture or something like that. And that's kind of where Katrina and I met, were these events I do at the museum, where the whole process is researching these works of art that I pick that I don't really like or understand or appreciate. And then at the almost at the end of every single project, I'm like, I love this work of art. I want to bring it home. It's the most important work of art in my life. It's fascinating.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's almost like you have like a relationship with the art. You know what I mean? Like you are getting to know art. Like you like let it in, and it's cool. Every human probably takes information in a different way.
Yeah.
If it gets there, then
But I think that's what's cool about, and that is my passion for, about food as art. Mm-hmm. Because I think that for some people, being in a gallery or being at a museum and seeing art brings them to that emotional place. Mm-hmm. And for other people, like a sculpture that they can encounter or something, or a performance that they experience in that way. But what I love about the folks that we were able to profile on this Artbeat and others who are doing this is that you have an experience by taking something in, literally. Mm-hmm. So when you bite into some Alma chocolate, or you try one of the sundaes, or you're one of the other stories is about Diana Abu Jaber, who writes books that have a lot of Arab American food in them because she is Arab American. And then Sebastian Cisneros, our other story, who's a chocolate maker who goes from beans to liquid chocolate. There's something that you get of an idea as you actually get to eat it.
Okay, that totally reminds me. There used to be a ride at Disneyland. And you'd go into the microscope. Did you guys ever go on that?
No.
Okay, well, it's not there anymore. It was by Monsanto, who now
goodness.
All sorts of problems
look
with
at
Monsanto.
All the
but whatever.
Biomes being killed.
Yeah, okay, well, whatever. So you went in a little doodle dad cube thingy. You got in, and then it's like, you're going into the microscope. And you go, and everything gets bigger and bigger, and you get smaller and smaller. And I'm thinking about chocolate going into people. You know? It's so cool to, like, really do a piece about how does it go down, and what gets in the brain, and how does it get perceived?
This is the magic school bus.
Right.
Yeah.
You're so right, and that's actually it was funny. I thought, no, there was a TV thing too, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah. Mrs. Frizzle.
Oh yeah.
Magic school bus.
I don't know if there's like
an
if there's a well.
If you need Mrs. Frizzle, please hire me.
There was a magic school bus show for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time.
But they didn't do any food related ones.
Oh.
Yeah.
Morgan Street Theater. Yes. Magic School Sunday. I'm just saying.
Yeah, really. Everyone on the bus.
Yes.
Let's go.
The Morgan Street Theater.
Having it on a bus.
I know.
And you've got your Mrs.
Frizzle. Oh my god. Yes.
And she also had like a lizard that rode on her shoulder. I remember that. And I am not afraid of lizards.
See, there you go. We're casting it right now. Quickly call in if you want to participate.
Everyone's going to want to participate. There's food involved.
Well, but truly, I mean, that's one of the, what I was alluding to before is this idea that sometimes people see art as hard to understand, or they see it as for other people, or they see it as you walk into a gallery and you're not going to know what to do. And what I love, I mean, what we try to do on our show, but what I loved about this topic in particular is food is really accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody that can eat ice cream or chooses to could make an ice cream sundae. So if you get inspired by what Jared's doing, you could make your own sundae inspired by your own picture. It's not this thing that only he can do. It's this idea that you can take the materials you have around you. Mm-hmm. You can take the fact you're disgruntled about lack of good chocolate for an Easter basket, and you can do something about it that speaks to you, but then also speaks to others.
Okay,
and that's sort of the essence of art.
Yeah, speaking of that Easter basket, though, now your daughter and granddaughter probably gets the best Easter basket that was ever, ever put together in the history of the world.
It's true.
Oh.
Well, I have a new grandson. He's too little to eat chocolate just yet.
Couldn't you, like, you know, put it in a little eyedropper, like with baby birds?
Yeah, when do they get to have chocolate?
Well, that's very controversial.
Oh.
In the fence, when you introduce sugar to babies.
How's that going to work?
Yeah.
We are a little...
Well, you know, Katrina introduced me to an artist named Wendy Redstar.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a contemporary Native American artist.
She's amazing. If you don't know her, she had an exhibit up at Portland Art Museum. Mm-hmm. She's
Amazing.
I did the story.
Well, something about her that I've been thinking a lot about is that she collaborates with her daughter, who's, I don't know, eight, nine, or ten. She's not very young.
Almost ten.
Okay, she's nine.
She's awesome. Okay. Beatrice.
And I don't totally know the process, but whatever her idea is, somehow Beatrice is involved. And so that just got me thinking, like, how could I get my daughter involved? And lately, she's been telling me ideas she has for Ice Cream Sundays. She has ideas for ice cream flavors.
And she's five?
She's almost five. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking that I actually want to nurse this idea and encourage her artistic side and legitimize it and do an event down the road where maybe... I mean, one idea I had was she could write the stories. She could tell stories and I could create desserts inspired by her stories. Or her drawings, or just anything where her ideas are...
The jumping off point.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah. Or you could connect up with Wendy, and you and Wendy could both do it with both of your daughters.
That's awesome.
And it could be called collaborating with your daughters.
That's right. Well, then you can have your daughter
friends. Well, I was going to say you can too, since apparently everyone's joining. But
yeah.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
But
what's inspiring you both now for your work? And you too, Katrina. You know, I know you've got all sorts of shows lined up, but... Sarah, is there something in particular that you're kind of gestating?
Well, that's interesting because actually I'm just kind of, we've been in a 2-year kind of big growth spurt where I didn't get to do much creative because it was really about, here's one of the problems of art versus commerce. Like, you got to have a business that things that people want to buy, right? So we've been trying to nail down the... things that could kind of perform for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a different process, but that's getting a more nailed down and we have a core item of things that are dialed in. So I'm getting to return back again to some more of the creative stuff. And right now what we're working on, we're doing these first Friday happy hours with different, well, the Cheers, a cheesemaker across the hall from us. And we bring in a distiller or a winemaker or a beer maker. And so we're trying to do a special edition chocolate with each person that comes in.
Oh, neat.
Using their things or, you know, that'll go with the chocolate and the cheese and this booze, something like
every month, it's different chocolate.
Every month, a different one. So that's super, I mean, that's what I live for, getting to do that.
That's a lot. For once a month, that's a big undertaking, it seems to me.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's what you do.
Chocolate's the base.
Yeah, chocolate's the base. Right. Yeah.
Nice. How about you?
My project is actually on the political side. Mm-hmm. I know we could probably talk about politics for a long time. Well, perhaps. but I will keep it short. I think in the political climate that we live in, I think that many people are kind of encouraged to resist or respond or react in their own way. And I feel like Morgan Street Theater is an interesting vehicle for responding because I'm bringing different groups of people together to hear stories and eat ice cream. So there's kind of this like relaxed informal environment, but what about if I talk about more serious things? I'm putting together a show about being a Jew that will be specifically about the Shabbat or the Sabbath, which is Friday to Saturday night. And I'll be weaving personal stories with Jewish history with the goal of touring the project outside of the city and bringing it to rural communities.
Oh, that's exciting.
And churches and mosques and community centers. Because what's really become apparent to me is that a lot of people have never met a Jew or don't know anything about Judaism. And the rise of anti-Semitism in this country has been pretty astounding to me. And I feel like Jewish stories with ice cream might be an itty bitty opportunity to enlighten people or just engage people who are very different from me.
Okay, so here's a weird question, but because I know a little bit about Judaism and I am Jewish, is so ice cream, dairy, are you not going to do an Orthodox Jew or
I have a standard dairy that other ice cream businesses have given me. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to do a meat ice cream. I don't want to do that.
So you're not going to mix dairy up with anything that's non-kosher?
Well, there was some bacon.
That's true. Well, that's true. Okay.
I once did a bacon egg.
But it's not like...
It was for Green Eggs and Ham, a Dr. Seuss book, if I remember
correctly. Yes, yes. I don't do it like in mass, I suppose. And that's not... No, that would be... for this particular project, I'm actually working on the whole thing, that menu now. But because it's about Shabbat and Jewish tradition, I'm kind of taking traditional Jewish foods and combining them with nostalgic Americana desserts.
Are you going to do blintzes?
No, I'm going to do babka, and I'm going to do challah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Haricot ice cream.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Well, that will be next Thursday.
I love it.
Yes.
Yes.
So I make a haroset ice cream.
The mortar of the gods. Haroset?
Is that how you say it? Haroset?
You can say haroset.
Haroset or haroset.
This is so brilliant because, you know, when I was...
I have two kids and one of them I had quite young. And I traveled with her quite a bit. And she was like the instant door opener. And I feel like... You know, babies are, you know, I feel like ice cream is too, right? Like you're going to open doors to people that might be hesitant about.
That's the goal.
Yeah, I love that.
I've come to see Morgan Street Theater or just an aspect of it. It's an ice cream social. Mm. I mean, there's this nostalgic notion of like people getting together and eating ice cream. And I think that before digital technology, people would get together and tell stories and eat food. So it's not like, the same, I'm not like, it's not a new idea to tell stories while we eat food. It might be a new idea to create desserts inspired by the stories, but just this idea of sharing a meal and stories together, for me, I think why Morgan Street Theater has been successful, and it started in my dining room, I had no idea it was gonna take off, is because people wanna connect. And the stories create a shared context for people. And all of a sudden, instead of just talking about like, where are you from and what do you do and what's your name? It's like, has that ever happened to you? Oh man, when it happened to me, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, people are like able to connect in a more meaningful way.
It's so interesting to me because I feel that when you give people a shared experience, whether they're eating your beautiful chocolates together or seeing a show at Morgan Street Theater, you unlock the door of people being able to be together. You provide the open door, as you said, with the baby and the ice cream, of thinking, we saw something together, so I can talk. It's safe, you know? You have a safe place to enter the conversation, and then hopefully the art inspires them to go deeper, you know, in contact.
I think that's the power of food. It's just, it brings people together.
And some would say it's the power of art.
Right.
That it helps people or encourages them to go a little deeper because you're sharing an experience of looking at something or experiencing something that touches you more deeply maybe than you thought it would. Mm. And so what I love, as I said before, but what I love is that food helps make that more tactile and visceral for a lot of people who think, oh, I don't understand art, but I sure like chocolate. And you don't have to go too many bites into one of Sarah's chocolates or one of Sebastian's chocolates before you think, wow, this has a different feel to it than a candy bar that I bought at the store. Mm-hmm. Because there's something, there's more intention maybe behind the chocolate. There's an idea there in the same way as Jared's sundaes.
I would connect that, in my mind, to food politics. I was looking at your website and the description of all my chocolates, I was like, that's what I aspire to, where it's like, you know, using these like, top-notch ingredients that are locally sourced and Oregonian at times, and getting people to be like, man, this is really good. Where did this hazelnut come from? Where did these herbs come from? Where did these spices come from? And all of a sudden, not only is it delicious, but it's striking up a conversation about connecting to the ingredients, which is kind of the food world we live in now, I think.
Well, it's so cool because it brings me back to one of my favorite inspirations, and that's Mr. Rogers. And he always was interested in what he was looking at, who made it. And it's just where I hope our world will head, that little bit of slowing down into, where did that come from? Who, someone made it. Someone who's living maybe near me or maybe 8,000 miles away, you know? It's great. So it's been a real joy connecting with all three of you. And Katrina, go ahead and remind everybody about the preview of the show and Morgan Artbeat.
Right. So yeah, if you want to watch the show with company, in company, we're going to be watching it together on Thursday, April 13th. The show airs at 8, and we're going to be at Beulah Land. I think it's Beulah Land Bistro or Pub or something, right on Northeast 28th in Portland. And you can meet there around 7:30. At about 7:55, they're going to turn the channel to OPB so we can all watch together. I think Sarah's going to be there.
Yep.
Someone from Jared's family may. We're going to hopefully have a nice crowd of people. But then if you don't want to go out, it'll be on OPB at 8 o'clock, Thursday the 13th of April, and then again on Sunday, and online all the time.
That's right. So happy Easter, happy Passover. I mean, I probably could also celebrate and say that next week, but we were talking about it, and go out, and I guess we could say play with your food.
Yeah.